Hello, I'm Matt Wells. This is your early bird Christmas edition of Media Talk coming up.
Lisa and Brendan, Tom and Camilla, and Rachel and Vincent. You will all go through to next week's grand final.
Yes!
Strictly dumb voting. We discuss another fiasco at TV Centre as the BBC messes up the viewers' vote in its dance-off. Also in the podcast, Ed Sturton is given the boot from today. Is he too posh for Radio 4? Plus, four new ways to fund Channel 4, The Guardian's shiny new home, and
crisp pastry, gorgeous, spicy, gooey interior.
We ask, has Nigella jumped the shark? This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, Panto King Christopher Biggins, if you've been reading the tabloids, celebrating his 60th birthday with a lavish bash at a top London hotel this week. The London paper called it the showbiz event of the year. And to mark the occasion, they did. And to mark the occasion, we've got two of Media Talk's grandest dames here in the pod. Emily Bell is The Guardian's resident widow twanky.
thank you very much.
No, she's
Matt.
Not.
I know, I'm not.
She's our director of digital content. Are you treading the boards in Scarborough this year, Emily?
No, but I've been to see the marvellous Clive Rowe at the Hackney Empire, which
Excellent,
everyone should go to.
Broadcasting consultant and managing director of Kizco TV, Paul Robinson, was meant to be here, but I'm afraid I can't find him.
Oh, yes, you can.
Or perhaps
he's behind you.
There you are, Paul.
Very good, yes. I've been to the Wimbledon Theatre and saw Gareth Gates, who wasn't very good.
Oh, dear.
Was the food from Iceland at the Christopher Biggins event?
I think it was, actually, probably.
Yeah, served by Kerry Katona.
Yes.
We should have been there. Right, I think we've stretched that joke about as far as we can take it. It's time to talk media.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
Let's start with TV, and the BBC has found itself in hot water again this week. But we'll talk about the Stephen Carter Digital Britain report in a minute. The Corporation and Ofcom have received nearly 2,000 complaints from viewers angry at the decision to overturn the public vote in last weekend's Strictly Come Dancing. Now, the BBC offered to refund those fans for the cost of their wasted call, but surprise, surprise, that hasn't put the issue to bed either. Now, Emily, just quickly, but let's have a minute or two on this before we talk about the Digital Britain report, which is obviously the serious issue of the week.
The proper story.
But it's astonishing how... What I can't quite get my head around is this a proper story in the... in the area of trust in television and all the rest of it, or is it another just thing got up by the Daily Mail?
No, I think it's a foul up. I have to say that it's one of those things where people say this is so obvious, it should be obvious to anyone who's got GCSE maths, which obviously I predate GCSEs, but I scraped a qualification of some type of numeracy. And actually, I can't quite get my head around it, but it is to do with, you know, that they reached a position where there was no point in having the public vote because it wouldn't change things anyway. Is it a scandal?
Is it a scandal, Paul?
No, idiocy.
It's incompetence. I mean, look, you know,
but
I always...
But it's bad that it happened, though, isn't it?
Well, it's incompetent in that they hadn't designed a system that was foolproof, that would cover all the eventualities. They should have thought through what happens if the judges and the public tie.
Exactly.
There should have been some system in place in advance, and they hadn't thought that through.
And it wasn't an obscure eventuality. It was quite possible that it would happen.
Absolutely. It was blindingly obvious something like that was going to happen at some point. You know, in contrast, actually, the X Factor have thought it through, you know. They have got a process. But the way they handled it, say we're not going to refund the votes, you know, is so stupid and so naive. And then just to backtrack.
And especially on their flagship show, on the week that it's head-to-head with the final of The X Factor as well.
Absolutely.
How amazing they should reach, they should have such a terrible thing happen when they were head-to-head with the X Factor, which meant that they were on the front of all the tabloids the next day.
Well, yes, absolutely.
They must have been devastated.
They must have been, yes. Well, now let's get on to more serious matters. Now, Media Guardian reported this week that the government has come up with four ways to solve Channel 4's funding crisis, and they're part of the new Communications Minister Lord Carter's interim Digital Britain report, the final edition of which is due out in January. Now, this is at the same time as Ofcom will finally reveal its recommendations of its public service broadcasting review. Now, get your pen and paper ready. The options for Channel 4 are privatisation, number one, a merger with Channel 5, presumably creating Channel 4.5, or a tie-up with BBC Worldwide, or further unspecified public subsidy to keep it afloat. Emily, we've had the Ofcom public service broadcasting review, which has been going on for about the last 28 years, it seems. Now Lord Carter has got his nose in, and he's doing his own report. Ex of Ofcom, of course.
Yes.
And it's all a bit weird.
Well, it's not only is it a bit weird, but actually the Digital Britain Working Group is a slightly sort of obscure beast. I don't know who they're working with or what the process for feeding this through is, or to what extent it's Stephen Carter saying, well, actually, you know, I've got a track record and a great deal of experience in media regulation, and here's what I think. You know, I'm not at all sure what the consultative process for this has been. And yes, there are now four options on the table. I think, interestingly, you know, Ofcom would say they've identified the future of Channel 4 as being one of the key things they have to resolve. But I think that everybody feels that privatisation is probably kind of almost sort of slipping out of view as an option at the moment because it wouldn't raise very much money. Well, you know, what is Channel 4 worth? Not very much.
Well, none of these options. We've been around the block on quite a lot of these options before, haven't we, Paul? And it's amazing that they still keep coming up.
I mean, the options are blindingly obvious. You know, there's nothing new here. What I think is extraordinary is it's sort of starting with the wrong end of the telescope. Shouldn't it be, what do we actually want from our public service broadcasting and then how are we going to fund it? Not let's try and sort of patch over with elastoband, elastoplast and fix it.
And in fairness, actually, Ofcom did
that
do it that way.
Ofcom did.
They said we want plurality and we think a broadcaster, an existing broadcaster, is the way to deliver it.
But so there's a good question. Why do you need plural broadcasts of PSB content? I think that's this is another concept I've never understood. Why you have to have, you know, more broadcasters? It's like Greg Dyke saying, remember, you've got to have more than one regulator. So, well, actually, no, hang on. The thing about public service broadcasting is, by definition, to a large extent, public service broadcasting is stuff the market doesn't provide.
Ooh,
therefore, it's funded in a different way.
This is controversial, Paul.
This is the first
market failure. Market failure definition.
This is the first person
who's
come into the podcast and said, just leave it to the BBC.
Well,
is that your view?
I think it probably is. Yeah. I really think it is.
I have agreed with that in the past, and I think in some ways I still do. Well, I don't see the point of having competitive public service broadcasting. I can see the point of having plural public service broadcast or content provision.
So if you top slice the licence fee, for example, that might make some sense.
Yeah, but maybe give it to the British film industry, or give it to documentary makers, or give it to me, or give it to, you know, give it to anybody who can produce public service content. I can't really connect the bits of Ofcom that say it has to come through Channel 4 because that's the best way of delivering it, and we must have Channel 4, we must have plurality of public service. But the point is, it doesn't matter what sort of the options are, as Paul says, they're all blinding novices. Please make a decision. And I think, again, this is exactly what Ofcom would say now.
It doesn't
matter. Just make a decision.
It is time to make a decision.
Absolutely.
Now,
I couldn't agree with Emily more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we are. We've sorted that one out. Thank you very much. We'll leave all that there. Leave your comments on Strictly and Channel 4 at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Still to come, has Mark Damaser fired the Wrong Today programme presenter? And Gareth McLean will be here to talk cookery porn and the return of Nigella Lawson. There's plenty more to get through first, though. Emily and Paul, let's pick up on some of the other media stories this week. Now, the Digital Radio Working Group report at the time of podding hasn't been published. But, Paul, we do pretty much know what's going to be in it, aren't we?
Yeah, we do. I mean, the big thing really is they're saying you need £100 million to fund DAB to get the transmitter built out, because without that, you can't get national coverage. And the big question is, who's going to cough up £100 million for DAB?
Oh, well, it wouldn't be the BBC, I don't suppose, might it?
Well, where else do you look?
I don't know. We've just been talking about, you know, the get funding gap in public service broadcasting, and the BBC is the only organisation that's got any money.
Well, if you think that having a replacement for FM is a public purpose, if you think you need to have a way of delivering linear radio, and currently DAB is the only way, you know, with its limitations, it is the only way, you know, the BBC is the obvious place. The BBC did kickstart DAB in the mid-90s by investing in the initial build for the transmitters, so you could argue it's merely an extension of that.
Emily, do you think it's right that the BBC should be asked to pay for the funding gap in digital radio?
Yes, I do, because A, they are the only ones who have money, B, it is an interim platform, but it still needs building out probably, and C, because the commercial radio has no money, and actually a lot of commercial operators have got to the point where they're handing their licences back because they just can't support. They can maybe support one platform, but not two.
Yeah.
So in ways, it's a kind of like a bank bailout, but for the commercial radio sector as well.
And that's the point. And the other problem is they're saying buying Switch off in 2020, and that's exactly the problem Emily's pointed out. They're paying for both analog and digital, and there's no way commercial radio can afford to pay for both till 2020.
All right, so perhaps DAB is not dead yet. Keep watching mediaguardian.co.uk for more details on that report due later in the week. Now, it's also been interesting to note that a number of newspapers have been announcing tie-ups with broadcasters. The Telegraph and the BBC announced one last week, which we touched on in last week's podcast. Now, this week it was the turn of the Indie to sign up France 24.
Yes.
France 24, I should say. Obviously a major player in the world of broadcast news.
May we?
And does this mean that we're going to get...
Je dois vous annoncer.
That we're going to get a new...
A nouvelle...
the news headlines en français on independent.co.uk. That'll be interesting. Do you think Roger Alton's been brushing up on his French?
I couldn't possibly comment. Well, we should welcome partnerships, yes. Multimedia partnerships of all varieties. This one is perhaps harder to see the cut through than some.
Well, I suppose, you know, that leaves The Guardian with, I don't know, Men and Motors or Dave, doesn't it?
I think even we could do slightly better than that. We might be able to get, you know, Living 2.
Yes. Well, speaking of Dave, Dave Cameron was ousted as a secret Guardianista this
ousted,
week.
Ousted? I hope he wasn't. That would, you know, that would so half
he,
our...
He was outed.
Outed as a Guardian. But we knew that because he's praised our Polly.
Well, that doesn't mean
skies.
He reads The Guardian, does he? He's on the tube reading The Guardian, coming back from Canary Wharf.
I would imagine that he reads The Guardian every day.
Right.
Probably online.
I'm sure he does. We should also mention that, of course, as you probably read from Media Guardian this week, The Guardian has moved to shiny new offices in King's Place. Lots of middle-ranking executives have offices with words on their doors.
Yes, that's right.
Well, their names, you mean?
Oh, no, not their names, just random
words.
Sort of words.
They're not random words. They relate to the core purpose as being providers of high-quality journalism.
What's your word,
for example?
Respond.
Respond.
Yes, Janine Gibson, who some people are familiar with in this pod, she's got wider written on her door.
Wider.
No, reflection of her.
No. And it says higher on the other bit.
Higher. That's Alan Rusbridge's office.
Higher and wider.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think we'll just move on. It is like play on contract. We'll move on. You can read more about these stories and more at mediaguardian.co.uk. Time to turn our attention to the radio.
Good morning. This is Today with Sarah Montague and John Humphreys.
Yes, this week poor old Ed Sturton discovered that he's been relieved of his presenting duties on the Today programme. He's to be replaced on Radio 4's flagship news show by Justin Webb, the BBC's North America editor. The move is being seen by some as a rather ruthless act by the Radio 4 hierarchy, and Sturton admitted to feeling, quote, devastated by the news, which he discovered by another journalist phoning him up. Paul, you're a former radio executive. This is, you know, if you are going to get rid of anybody, and not everybody has a guaranteed place on any programme for life, You do it in a slightly different way than this, don't you?
Well,
you take them out to lunch and say,
yes.
You've done a marvellous job.
Well, you always know, actually, you think lunch actually normally is a bollocking.
Right.
Sacking is normally a dinner. Definitely, that's the
definitely
way it goes.
Definitely
a dinner for a sacking. But the poor guy's got to continue till September 2009.
No, has he?
Yeah, he's on till September 2009. I was reading Ariel yesterday and he was in, you know, sort of espousing there. Apparently, he's got to continue till for 9 months. And I mean,
it's like George Bush, a lame duck presenter.
Yeah, and the thing about Edward Sturton, look, I mean, yeah, he was a bit posh, but I mean, he was a little bit dull too, wasn't he, really?
I have to say, I was never a big fan.
To me, he was the joint second least irritating presenter.
Sorry, how is it? I'm trying to work that one.
Yeah, is that good or
on the Today programme?
Who's that?
That's good. Right. Relatively good. I liked Ed Sturton. I was a good presenter. And if he's too posh, why replace him with Justin Webb?
Another posh bloke.
Exactly.
Very posh, yes.
Another posh white bloke. And where are the women?
Well, this is the thing. I don't understand this. If you are freshening up the Today programme, then surely the one thing that they're really missing is a bit of the, you know, the fairer sex.
And they have plenty of, you know, they could have looked at Martha Carney. They could have looked at Carrie Gracie from...
Carrie Gracie is fantastic. You know,
she's fantastic. She won the... was it Sony? Nick Clark for sort of Interviewer of the Year.
Yeah.
Does fantastic work on The World Service.
And I like Ritala Shah on The World Service.
Also extremely good. No diversity, all white.
Yeah.
anywhere, look anywhere other than another middle-aged white man.
Except I do think... I was going to say, I think Evan Davis has actually made a difference, and he is obviously a white middle-aged man. He has brought a new energy and vitality to today,
I think. He's, of course, gay, so he's allowed in on the diversity.
Okay, so he hits it for being gay, but he still has made a difference. I think he's got a much lighter touch.
But also, you know, there are not many people in the whole of broadcasting who have Evan's cerebral insight, particularly into things like complex stories like The Economy. You know, he is phenomenally bright.
But he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. You know, he's able to make it work.
I mean, I think that, you know, on merit, you would have him, as I say, he's the least irritating. He's top of my list of least irritating today presenters. Right. But you know, it's just a mix of voices in the
morning. None of this suggests that they have a succession plan for John Humphreys, does it? I mean, it doesn't look... But none of these appointments look like a successor to John Humphreys, and I wonder what they're going to do about that.
Well, I think Evan Davis is sort of going to be the key anchor, isn't he?
John Humphreys still gets the big interview, still gets the 8:10 slot. Yeah.
I can't see any of the other presenters being...
No, not
a
at the moment.
Successor to John Humphreys.
Oh, look, raise your eyes, boys. Come on. I think that, you know, when John Humphreys retires, which will, as I say...
Sometime
must
in
be,
2050.
must be sometime. You know, must get bored with all those 4 a.m. starts. That they do have strong, you know, they do have strong people, and as I say, Evan is the strongest of the Today crew at the moment. And we probably thought sort of pre Brian Redhead, who could possibly replace Brian Redhead. That's not the way to do it, really, is it?
I wonder whether had Channel 4 radio started, they might have thought differently, because of course they can still be posh now because there's no competition
coming. There you go. One final BBC question: Mark Law writes on our Facebook wall, why did the poor old BBC staff get such a hammering for spending a measly $45,000 on a launch party? Compared to other corporate excesses, this is small celebration. Why is it the BBC staff are constantly expected to be so abstemious? After all the work that goes into producing a show, can they not have the odd beer bust? I find it very sad. This is, of course, referring to a Channel 4 News story, which emerged this week. The BBC had spent £45,000 launching Merlin.
Yes. How much are they going to spend burying it?
That's very good. And with that, we'll move on. Now, The Guardian's TV writer Gareth McLean has joined us. He's been sitting there.
I've been here biting my tongue.
Yes. Well, you know, we were running a bit late in the podcast.
Well, no, that's fine. I just did walk all the way here, though. I have been having a mince pie.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you enjoying a mince pie?
Well, they're a bit dry, aren't they? I don't really like mince pies, but if there's nothing else, I'll eat them.
These are Sainsbury's.
That's like Toblerone. If there's nothing else, right, I'll eat a Toblerone, but I don't really like it.
Sainsbury's 6 deep mince pies.
Other mince pies are available.
Well, presumably from...
Don't send them in, though, because I don't like them.
Presumably on... I haven't watched every episode of Nigella's Christmas Kitchen, but she must have had a recipe for mince pies.
Oh, she did on that one, when she wasn't drizzling all over our kitchen.
We have one now. Here's one for you.
Cloves, cinnamon and, of course, cranberries add a spicy depth to my star-topped mince pies. I need the velvety warmth of my roast squash and Stilton soup. And my star from the east, a gloriously spicy lamb tagine with dates, with its red onion, coriander and pomegranate relish.
It gets too pervy after that. We have to cut it off. It's family.
Oh, well, I don't know about you. I'm a bit warm downstairs
family
now.
Family podcast.
she wasn't stuffing an enormous bird, though, was she?
No. But do you know, she spends all afternoon stuffing a marrow.
Does she really?
There you go.
Where she stuffs it, I don't know.
I was going to make a joke. I can't possibly make the joke that I was thinking about on it.
Yes.
I'm not.
Can I just ask about the Today programme? Does anyone actually care about the Today programme?
Yes, I care.
Ooh, rubbish.
No, it's not.
No, what you must do in the morning is listen to Sarah Kennedy on Radio 2 and then flick over to the World Service and listen to their breakfast programme, which is much better. And then a bit of Terry Wogan. And all this stuff, Evan David. The best broadcaster on British radio is Eddie Mayer.
Yes, why didn't they get him to present the Today programme?
Isn't he too grand, though, now?
They can't have two Scottish people on the helmet.
Margaret Nochte. Send her back to Aberdeen.
We seem to have managed two Scottish people in the pod.
Two Scots and two gays. We have two Scots and two gays in the
Welsh.
In the podcast. Well, I do have a... I'm sort of a bisexual when it comes to nationality. we should...
slash straddle, totally unfussy.
You straddle both assemblies, do you, Matt?
He's got a foot in Cardiff, a foot in Edinburgh, and the world in between.
No devolution for you this Christmas.
Should we get back to Nigella? I think she jumped the shark.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think you're our audience.
I think that was a long time ago.
It's not even her house. Did you notice?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's not her house.
Do you think they're her
friends? Because when you make a recipe at home, you don't pretend that you're talking and doing stuff, do you? And this is now I'm chopping the onion and now I'm doing this. It's not. It's on television. It isn't real.
If it's not her house, does that mean it's not her friends that are in it?
She doesn't have any friends. One time I saw on one programme, Alan Yentob was there.
I've spotted friends of hers at dinner because I think they are her real friends.
Are they?
Yes, and I'm a devotee of Nigella's oeuvre, not her TV oeuvre, her written oeuvre. Right. Though my husband did sit up and rather oddly watched her on demand other night. Late night, yes.
Ooh, worrying.
He said he couldn't sleep.
With a cushion in his lap. When you open the door, what are you doing, darling?
Nothing.
Now, listen, I think we better get off that subject after having brought you back to it. What about... now, Survivors is finished, which we're
nearly finished. Penultimate one. That was the penultimate one.
Was it 5 million viewers watching that?
Still, 5 million viewers. It's got very high AIs.
Yes, which what does that mean?
I don't know. No, isn't it audience appreciation?
Yeah, that's right.
It is.
Appreciation index.
Yes. Thank you, yes. But they won't reveal all the figures for everything, which I think is cheating. Yes, it finishes next week. Just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for Christmas, yes.
I'm hoping for Bone Kickers on DVD for my stocking.
Okay. What about X Factor Final?
Wasn't Beyonce good?
Oh,
I thought Beyonce was fantastic.
She rocks.
But and it was very brave. How did they get her? Like, Ichon and what's his name? And the other one's got crappy old boys on in Westlife. Lonnie Walsh's cast off.
They were so desperate.
Meanwhile, Cheryl puts in a call.
They were so desperate not to have either of that set of old dross winning.
Well, I think that was the thing. Because at one moment I thought singing live with Alexandra would be Bewitched. But no.
Yeah. Or Cleopatra coming at you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that would have been good. Yes. Yeah, excellent. I was a JLS fan myself. I thought JLS would.
Yeah, they came second. They're good little boys. Yeah, they well.
Absolutely.
They well. Quite sweet.
Creepy.
They're not.
They look like shoplifters.
They're not. Yes. They'll do well anyway.
Is there anything else that we should mention?
Christmas.
Okay.
Is this the last one before Christmas?
It is. Christmas telly.
Oh, Christmas telly. Best things to watch. The Crooked House on BBC Four. Spooky Ghost Stories. The 39 Steps on BBC One.
Oh. With that guy that used to be in Spooks.
Rupert Penry-Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, and Spooks finished. Oh, exciting.
We talked about that before.
Yeah.
It's a bit confusing because we've recorded some of the podcasts out of order.
Out of sequence.
Yeah. Tomorrow, which I don't know, tomorrow will be when this goes out, I'll be at the Doctor Who Christmas screening.
Yes. Excellent.
Read my review first.
Okay. Well, I hope you're not going to give any plot lines away.
He dies at the end.
So the royal family.
There's going to be a royal family as well.
Yeah. But in a second, I was just going to ask about Doctor Who.
Yes.
Does the fact that What's-His-Face has done his back in?
Well, does I was that make wondering a difference? This. I was wondering if they might have to regenerate him early if he gets signed off work.
The doctor's been signed
off. I've got a note.
I've got a note from the doctor. Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's it. Right of time. We haven't got time to talk about the Royal Family, I'm afraid. Thanks to Gareth McLean, Emily Bell, and Paul Robinson for taking part in the last media talk from the old Guardian building. We had lunch in your office today, Emily. It felt a bit wrong to go down to Alan Rusbridge's old office and have lunch. That wouldn't have been quite.
No, that would have been a sign of disrespect too far. My office doesn't matter. People used to do all sorts of things in there.
So did they really?
Much right. worse than having their lunch.
So you went down to Alan's office and had a wee jobby on the floor.
No, we definitely didn't do that. Anyway, Emily and I will be back with a live-ish edition on Boxing Day that we haven't actually recorded yet, of course, with a special review show looking back on the big media stories of 2008. If you want to give us your feedback from this week, post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or head to the Facebook group. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening. Have a very happy Christmas. I can't pronounce that word.
Hanukkah.
And an even happier Hanukkah. There we are.
Oh, I knew that's what you're going to do. Don't you watch Friends?
No,
I don't. Happy Hanukkah.